Moncrief on News Talk.
I don't want to be at the head of society.
But you already are, and that is why you cannot be ruled by infatuation.
What I feel for Billy is real.
Billy will never achieve anything of note, and he will grow to resent you for his own shortcomings.
He's from a good family. 3 years ago, you would have begged to be invited into their drawing room.
We've overtaken them now. My sweet girl.
I'm not a girl. Not anymore. When will you see that?
You're a girl if I say. And I pray that's why you have no judgment. Please, God, you'll grow out of it.
Well, you have no values. Will you grow out of that?
That's The Gilded Age. You can stream new episodes of season 3 now every Monday on Sky Atlantic and Now TV. James Dempsey is with us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
So is this kind of like, now it's season 3, so it must be doing something, but did they originally want it to be kind of an American Downton?
That is very much exactly what they wanted. Julian Fellowes, who created Downton, and like, well, you know, I was surprised to see that Downton is still doing the rounds because there's a Downton movie coming out in September.
Is there? Yeah, right. Crikey.
So, like, Downton is not down
set
yet.
Set in the 1970s at this stage.
Right. The coal mining strike. Right. But anyway, so he originally pitched to NBC, you know, God, 10 years ago, an American show. And it kind of was going ahead until HBO sort of swooped in and ordered a straight to season one for season one, which was probably about 4 years ago at this point. And it was launched with kind of medium fanfare because it was the most expensive TV show of its day. I mean, I think the current estimated budget for each episode is $12 to $15 million.
Crikey.
Because obviously this is a period drama, so you're not buying those costumes off the rack, and everything is being absolutely custom made. But yes, its first season kind of was a bit of a shaky thing. It started filming and then it was interrupted by COVID. They used that time, and one of its stars, Danae Benton, who plays Peggy Scott, who is the African-American lead of the show, we'll say, sort of also kind of had a quiet word with them about how kind of a few ideas that she had for what they could potentially do with her character. And they retooled the show in the first season and it was kind of like a bit naff, but easy watching, right?
Yeah.
And season two came along and it was better, but again, a little bit naff and easy watching. And I will say, you know, I woke up this morning after a weekend of kind of very serious news to be delighted to see the only thing on my to-do list was watch an episode of season 3 of The Gilded Age.
Watch The Gilded Age to build a bunker. Yeah.
So all in season 3, I think it has definitely found its footing, but at certain expenses. So it's an upstairs, downstairs tale in an American vein, right? Mm. And because it is inspired by history and real life events, you see the characters taking on different sort of, shall we say, missions in each season that sort of tie into cultural events of the Gilded Age. And this time around, we have, well, without going into spoilers, Cynthia Nixon, who's having a much better time on this than she is on the third season of And Just Like That, which is not going down well with most people. She is now sort of the head of her household, of the two kind of spinstery quote unquote sisters, Ada and Agnes, and she is taking on the temperance movement, so and you know, coming down against alcohol. Then other things that we're definitely going to get in this season is suffragettes and the American suffragette movement that was hinted at. Then definitely divorce and what it means to be a kind of society woman when your husband is gone, I want a divorce, and you certainly don't, because it ruins your entire reputation and prospects and life. And then dollar princesses, which was this movement of marrying your extremely rich daughter off to some penniless baron or duke in the UK so that your family could get a title and he could plug the leak in the roof, right? Now, what's
that's like basically Downton, isn't it? Essentially.
Yes, exactly, right. Yeah, Cora, what, lady, whatever, right? Mm. Anyway, so all in, we're covering familiar ground and familiar territory here. In the first season, it spent a lot more time downstairs, and it seems over the three, you know, in the second season and now into the third, that they've kind of abandoned the pavos, shall we say, scrubbing the dishes and running up the stairs with cloches and dishes, etc. Right? Not entirely. I mean, they still feature in the episodes, but their jobs now are not so much to have independent storylines as to sort of comment as to what's going on upstairs. With one major exception, Ben Allers, who has become known, I think, as Clock Twink, he has this recurring story about trying to invent an alarm clock and maybe make his millions in doing so. They are still running with that 3 seasons in. I hope it comes to some sort of conclusion or success by the end of this run, shall we say. But what I have to really admire in the show is it is endlessly watchable, right? I don't think it is a particularly well written or good show, but the quality of the actors is absolutely incredible. So when it was first cast, it was obviously at a time when COVID was, I think, rearing its head, and Broadway was had gone quiet and gone dark because people couldn't gather in large theatres, shall we say. And, you know, looking at the cast, like I did very rough numbers, some, so I'm open to correction here, but across the cast of people both upstairs and downstairs, you're looking at 56 Tony nominations and 22 winners.
Wow.
In the cast.
Okay.
Right? So these are people who are extremely gifted actors and who can really sell the dialogue, even though at times I think it's apocryphal, but it was definitely apocryphal in Downton way back when. Sometimes it's so arch and on the nose that it's like almost they might as well be winking at you. And perhaps the most my biggest frustration with the show is it's a little toothless and in how it approaches race, right? Hmm. So, like, obviously, they have this character of Peggy Scott. She is the secretary to Christine Baranski's Agnes Van Ryn. She's a writer in her own right. She comes from a, like, middle-class African-American family, although her father was a slave, but had, you know, come out of slavery and had made something of himself, right? And she sort of has to bear the brunt of all of the kind of every single storyline that's to do with race. You know, even in this opening episode, we see her get sick. They call for the doctor and the doctor's like, well, I'm not treating her, and storms out.
Yeah.
But like, will that be ever commented on again? I'm not actually sure, because I suspect the rest of her season is not going to be her coughing up a lung.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, I think that's kind of it. We're done and we're moving on to the next bit, which is going to be about suffragettes and blah, blah, blah. Right. So like, all in, I don't think you should go to this looking for it to change your life and your perspective and your political philosophy. This is the most expensive soap opera on TV, and it knows that. And if you go in knowing that that's what you're going to get, I think you'll enjoy it, because it's camp, it's silly, it has a lot of women in bustles and corsets, you know, trading barbs. And my absolute favourite thing of the whole thing is, you know, you have Carrie Coon, who's just come off a very successful run on what's it called? On
The White Lotus.
The White Lotus. Thank you. Sorry. Momentary blank. Thank you very much, Sean. So that has really boosted her stardom, right? Mm. She plays Bertha Russell, who is considered the like conniving, manipulative, Machiavellian type mother. That's who we heard in the clip there, insisting that her daughter not run off in a love marriage, but instead be shipped off to some duke in the UK. And they paint her as this like genius and she's so clever and everything she does. But literally her solution to every problem is spend her husband's money.
Yes.
Well, just throw money at it and it's solved.
So is that kind of like, I say, Downton was about the aristocracy having to deal with the modern world and crass capitalism and all that kind of stuff. But these, like the Gilded Age, these are like crass capitalists pretending to be aristocracy.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the Morgan Spector, who is her husband, he's George Russell. He is a robber baron who I think in this day and age we would consider not particularly good people, but yet in the show he's still not a villain by any means. He's sort of like the robber baron with a heart of gold.
Ah, yes, of course he is. Right, our next show is before I do, why are things going badly for Cynthia Nixon?
Oh, in And Just Like That?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, And Just Like That season 3 has been, you know, not good, shall we say. I mean, it was mocked in that opening episode for Carrie's very flamboyant hat, but that's kind of part of the game for Sex and the City in general. But just the storylines in season 3 have been very disheartening. The romance with Aidan and Carrie is kind of going absolutely nowhere. And I thought in the last episode it would reach some sort of conclusion or some sort of progress. And actually, we're just got stalemate. Cynthia Nixon, obviously, as Miranda, had this not suitable for daytime transmission meme moment in the last episode that felt like something from, you know, 2015 rather than 2025. Yeah, just like even Seema, who's kind of the most, you know, who's a Samantha stand in for this time around, has very little to do this time around. All in, I don't know what is going on in season 3. Will I watch every single episode? Yes, till they cancel it. Certainly. I'm all in at this stage.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah. Right, our next show is Pushers. It's on Thursdays at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. You can stream the whole series on channel4.com. Here's a clip.
Listen, right, seeing you again, right, it's got me thinking. The ideal drug mule is a good old girl with an obvious disability. So, Viola!
Voila!
Voila!
Right, okay. So the concept is almost explained there. It's disabled people who are drug pushers.
Essentially, yeah. Right, so it comes from... It's created by Rosie Jones, who is a British stand-up with cerebral palsy. People will know her from a recent season of Taskmaster. And Peter Fellows... My understanding is no relation to Julian of Downton fame, but instead a writer on Veep and The Death of Stalin and Avenue Q, so an Armando Iannucci favourite, shall we say. And it's been attempted to get off the ground for about 10 years. That's when they created the show. And finally, it was made into a short for Channel 4. And then I would guess you kind of have to think of Taskmaster as being not only a very successful international show for Channel 4, but also a very good incubator of its talent, because you can take people who perhaps aren't very well known and pop them on a show for 10 weeks and have the public really grow to like them. And then suddenly... give them a starring vehicle that they created themselves. So, yes, it is about Rosie Jones playing Emily. She is a woman with cerebral palsy who, in the very opening scene, gets her benefits cut off by the DWT. I think I'm not quite sure what that is, but anyway.
The benefits people.
The benefits people in the UK. And she finds herself down on her luck. She's working for, she's volunteering more so for a charity called WECU, where she goes around inspecting various public places to see if they have a bathroom that is able to be used by disabled people. And in doing so, she bumps into her old friend, a guy she knew from school. Ewan Sheridan is the character's name. He's played by Ryan McParland. You heard him there doing his absolutely spot on Mancunian, but admittedly quite pantomime-y Mancunian accent. Yeah. Although he is a Northern Irish actor, he was probably his biggest role to date was in Say Nothing, where he had a, you know, he was one of the Northern IRA types in Say Nothing. And here he is the absolute scene stealer of the whole thing, because his character is this very gormless, silly, stupid idiot. But he manages to land these incredibly naff, dumb, you know, jokes so well. He's both a brilliant physical comedian, but just a vibes comedian. Whatever he does in his performance, I absolutely loved every bit that he was in. Now, Rosie Jones, I found very funny as well. Her time on Taskmaster, I mean, she's very kind of she laughs a lot. She's very kind of bubbly. And here she's much more straight-laced and is, in fact, the straight woman to it.
Yeah.
But what is very funny about the show is how quickly she succumbs to that Walter White desire of wanting to not only, you know, being a bit reluctant to get involved, to suddenly thinking, actually, I could really make something of this.
Yeah.
And there's the plot is essentially about trying to offload Ewan's 500 grand worth of cocaine. And when they've done that, she decides, well, maybe we could flog something cheaper and easier to get off the dark web, and so on. So the first half of the season, I really liked. I know it's obviously only 25 minute episodes. The second half sort of loses its ground a little bit. There are a lot of romantic subplots for the two leads that don't really go anywhere. And then while not quite as well cultivating the kind of rival gang story, because obviously they're stepping into the drug war turf and they're stepping onto someone else's turf, I didn't think that was particularly well established. But I'm kind of nitpicking here. All in, I liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was a great proof of concept for this kind of idea, right? I mean, you have not only Rosie Jones as someone with cerebral palsy, but you have other disabilities represented on the screen. You have John Furlong playing a man with severe mental health problems. You have Libby May playing a woman on the spectrum. Ruben Reuter is an actor with Down syndrome who's playing a character with Down syndrome.
He does reports in Channel 4 News, that.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So all in, it's a very like fresh, interesting, absolutely tongue in its cheek and occasionally black humoured look at disability and how the general public reacts to people with disabilities, giving the disabled the benefit of the doubt in many, many situations where in this show they are clearly in the wrong. But I can't say it's perfect. It's not perfect, but it is funny.
Yeah. Okay. Jerome wants to know, would you recommend Poker Face?
Yeah, I like Poker Face a lot. Now, for me, it's the kind of show that you need to binge, right? So they are releasing it week in, you know, weekly. I think there's 10 episodes a season, there might be 12. It's the kind of show that I think actually benefits from watching 2 to 3 at a time and several of them over a week rather than waiting. Because you have to get into the rhythm of the show and get into its eccentricities. But all in, no, I do like it, yeah.
Yeah, but it is Mystery of the Week stuff,
definitely,
really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why would you need to watch a few of them?
Because I just think it's obviously each individual mystery is different, but I think the show has its own sort of grammar, vernacular, style, etc., that can be, that you need to, like, it is completely and utterly built around its star, right? As in, when Rian Johnson was writing it, he was thinking of her, he was describing, like, the character is based entirely on her, the style, the language, everything. So I just think it's something for me that I enjoy more as a binge than as an individual serving.
My brother and I streamed the whole Pusher series yesterday. I thought it was very wacky and out there. It was a very different type of comedy, but did enjoy it, says a texter. Right, our third show is The Mortician. You can stream the entire series now on Sky Documentaries and Now TV. Here's a clip.
Like any other occupation, there are some bad apples. David Sconce had been a student here at Cypress College and had taken some of the courses in the mortuary science program. The scandal had huge reverberations. But after all these years, I don't think he's ever told his story.
Right. Okay. Now, this is set in the big box world of funeral homes.
Very much so, yeah. And it's from a scandal that took place in the 80s. So it is, right. And what we hear there is, you know, a current funeral director talking about John Sconce never telling, or David Sconce rather, never telling his story. And let me tell you, he doesn't stop shutting up for the entire show because they do actually get him in front of the camera. And what he is very, very happy to tell his side of the story in great detail. Now, it's a very macabre and greedy scandal, right? So essentially, he took over his family's. His family had a very well known and very well established funeral home in Pasadena, California, called the Lamb Funeral Home, and he took it over. His mother was the, you know, the heiress to the Lamb fortune, shall we say, and he took it over and realized very quickly in the early 80s that he could go from essentially cremating one body at a time to cremating two to then three to 20 to 200 at a time, right? And basically undercutting every other crematorium in the area, but absolutely filling his crematorium ovens to capacity beyond anything that could possibly be considered acceptable. And it meant that when people were then receiving the ashes of their loved ones,
You didn't know who it was.
I mean, of course, he was telling them exactly, this is your loved one, but who knows what you're getting.
Right,
kind of thing,
okay.
Right?
Just small technical. How do you fit? I mean, what kind of a size of crematorium can accommodate 200
Well, they
bodies?
Go into detail about that. It doesn't, you know, the 200 body crematorium doesn't happen until later in, so I won't go into what happens to why that happens. But let's say in the normal, very small family business that they were running, the crematorium part of it anyway, they go to great detail to talking about, you know, taking hammers to bodies and using meat hooks to push and pull and prod. And they would take great pride in one-upping each other into trying to get as many as they could, you know, beat the other person to play the human Tetris, essentially, in the oven. Now, what makes this a kind of very interesting documentary is, obviously, the tale in itself is really weird and creepy and sad.
Yeah.
But and while there are definitely victims, when this comes to true crime, it's not your usual kind of true crime where you're talking about some usually young 20-something-year-old woman who gets murdered brutally but never gets to speak her case. Here, the bodies were already dead, and while their family were definitely victims of this crime,
what was the crime, though? It was fraud?
Fraud and I think, you know, mishandling various different dead bodies, right? Which is, I think, a crime in and of itself. Now, David Sconce, however, then is revealed to be an even more sinister character than we first find out. And I won't go into details of that because I think that will qualify spoilers. But all in, what's fascinating here is, and I will say the director, a guy named Joshua Roffe, who is a very, very skilled true crime director. He made Lorena, which is a 4-part series on, I think it's streaming on Amazon now, Amazon Prime Video, which is about Lorena Bobbitt of the cutting off her husband's bits Bobbitt fame. Which is a very lurid kind of tale, but an incredibly well-made and thoughtful and interesting documentary. He has the kind of skill of turning these lurid, potentially sensationalist, I mean, definitely sensationalist material into really interesting examinations of characters being incredibly evil and greedy and so on. So all in, it's 3 1-hour long episodes. The story in and of itself is so bizarre, but David Sconce is, quote unquote, the star of it. I mean, he is the perpetrator and he sits down for very telling interviews where he is unashamedly telling his version of the story. Now, he's not quite admitting to doing every single thing and he kind of spins his narrative definitely, okay. But like he's definitely happy to tell his version of the story. And it's very rare that we get a true crime documentary where the person has, one, served their time, and two, is singing like a canary.
Right. So he's actually done time. Yes. Yes. The various crimes. Ooh, that's kind of creepy, all right. Right, so those three shows are The Gilded Age. You can stream new episodes of Season 3 every Monday on Sky Atlantic and Now TV. The second show is Pushers. That's on Thursdays at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. You can stream the whole series on channel4.com. Or The Mortician. You can stream the entire series now on Sky Documentaries and Now TV. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.